Redacted Media and GhostHat.net present The Filmological Society. In today's episode, we do a You Really Should See This Movie. And now, here's your host, Chris Schultz. Welcome to another podisode of the Filmological Society. This is the You Haven't Seen What show? And this is a special one because I don't believe any of us had seen this film before like a week ago. And
that's correct.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, let's introduce people first. That's the nice thing to do, right?
Good idea.
Very polite.
Good etiquette. So we'll start. The beautiful voice that you hear is Julia Smith. Julia, how are you?
I'm just fantastic. I'm going on vacation tomorrow.
Vacation from what? No, I'm kidding.
My life. My whole life.
With the gravelly voice, we have T.C. DeWitt.
Hey, it's good to be here, Chelsea. Julia, good to see you. I'm ready to talk about this movie.
There we go. And I am Chris Schultz, your other host. We watched, this is weird because, well, A, it's a recent film. It was just last year. B, it's an Adam Sandler film.
Yep.
Not named Billy Madison or in that era. Of
not definitely, most decidedly not a Happy Madison production.
No.
Although I think he should remake this as a Happy Madison production, right? Just same plot and script, but just let him go to town with the fart jokes.
Well, that means that Rob Schneider will be Arno.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where's my money?
So this is Uncut Gems from 2019. It is a Safdie brother movie. So Benny and Josh Safdie. So we're getting a lot of brothers, like a duo director writer. We got the Russo brothers. We got the Safdie brothers. Who are the brothers that did the Stranger Things?
The Duffer brothers. We have the Farrelly brothers from
the
Dumb Farrelly. And Dumber and
yep, Farrelly like brothers. Yeah. We have the Wachowski siblings.
The Chemical brothers. They're probably really nice, I would imagine.
Maybe.
We're not talking about the most famous brothers.
The Brothers Grimm.
Yep.
Those brothers.
Yeah, those brothers.
Oh, yes.
Is that what you're going to say? The Brothers Grimm?
No.
Oh.
One of my favorite movies of all time was directed by the Coen brothers.
Coen brothers. Oh, that's right. Yeah, they kind of started it all, right? The brother.
They did.
I mean. I
haven't heard of them. I don't know who that is.
Never heard of them. So good.
Oh, you mean the Coen brothers. That's how I say it.
Coen.
You know you're in when you say it that way.
Yeah. Wait, so speaking of the Coen brothers, have you both seen Raising Arizona?
Yes.
I love them so much.
That we can't podcast about.
No.
I was just watching it the other day. I love it so much. Just like, I love him so much.
See,
Nathan got Nathan Jr. He's the best one.
You got that. I'd love to talk Raising Arizona off mic.
Another time, another podcast.
So... I'll tell you, in 2019, I heard that Adam Sandler was going to have another film. My first thought was, well, A, is this must be another Netflix film because he has that deal with him.
Yeah.
And then I learned that it's not.
A24, man. A24. You should know what you're about to get yourself into when you see the A24 studio label.
Well, still...
That's true.
My expectations were not very high. Like, I had no... Yeah. I had zero desire to see this film when it came out. You know, I didn't want to read the reviews. It's Adam Sandler. I can't, you know, I've enjoyed his early stuff, but, you know, I know, TC, you enjoy watching all of his Netflix films, but.
I do. As soon as they drop, I have a party. It's me, all my stuffed animals, and we indulge, let me tell you. We watch it once. We watch it once straight up, and then we watch it again so we can talk through it, and then we watch it with the Spanish language. And then, seriously, you guys got to try this. Watch it with the descriptive audio that Netflix offers. It's great. Adam walks in the room. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah. So you're a super fan. Anyway. And then I heard about some Oscar buzz for Best Actor, Adam Sandler. A sentence. I don't know if you guys want to give it a try. It's a very difficult sentence to say.
Julia, give it a try. Let's see. Can you say potential Oscar?
The Oscar goes to Adam Sandler.
That just doesn't sound natural.
Rolls right off the butt.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, there's so many things. I thought this, go ahead, Chris, continue. I'm going to just be mute.
No, it's fine. Because
Chris is in a second going to say, I was wrong.
Well, we'll get to that at the end. We'll talk about that at the end. I will say that I had seen him in Punch Drunk Love. Mm-hmm. Which I think is an underrated film. I think
great film. Yeah, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Good I think that it's a little bit like a Cable Guy with Jim Carrey. People are going in expecting one film and getting a completely different film, and it makes it difficult for somebody like an Adam Sandler to kind of break through and try other things, right?
Yeah.
So, Julia, what about you? Before you saw this film, what were your thoughts about it? How badly did you want to see it at all? Talk about that.
Sure. So, I mean, I saw the trailer for it, and then it started getting, Oscar buzz. It was well reviewed. I just don't really go to the movies anymore, so I didn't have any interest in seeing it. Mostly because I don't have any interest in seeing any films unless it's a Bond, Batman or Bourne film for my husband, or a Disney movie with my goddaughter.
The three B's, very, very essential.
The three B's. The three B's. So then last week, but I'd always been wanting to watch it because I'm like, I heard it's a really good film, and I wanted to see Good Time. I had heard about Good Time, and it was the same brothers, and I haven't seen Good Time, and maybe we can podcast about that. I'm like, we'll probably watch it next weekend. So then last weekend, Kurt says, what movie do you want to watch? And I was like, I get to pick, and he's like, do you want to watch Eurovision? And I was like, I do not. I'm like, why don't we watch Uncut Gems?
Will Ferrell, Adam Sandler, they're so close in content right now.
So then I was like, let's watch Uncut Gems. And he was like, okay, because he had heard it too. And that's why. I just was like, let's watch this. And we've been slowly trying to get through all the Best Picture nominees, and I need to before. I've seen quite a few. It was actually one of the better years of me watching a lot of Best Picture nominees. Before I make the bold statement that I believe Uncut Gems should have been nominated for Best Picture. There, I said it. But I have to see the ones I haven't seen yet before I can really be like.
What did win Best Picture? Yeah, see, that's always a funny thought to think like how important the Best Picture is. And then it happens. It's like, wait, what won?
Well, let's be fair. Right. It was Parasite, but let's be fair.
Oh, right.
There's a lot of shit that has happened since February.
It's been about
this year, unlike any other year. Does everyone remember in January when Australia was burning? That was this year. That was this year.
Oh, my God.
So I think it's a little unfair to ask people what happened in February.
It's true. It is though, you guys, every week seems like the longest week ever. It's like, oh my God, it's only Wednesday. I'm not going to make it. And then you wake up and it's July 1st and you're like, where the hell did June go? June's just gone. We're never going to get June back.
No.
It's just gone.
It's completely gone. You're right.
It's complete. And I haven't seen I haven't seen Parasite yet. I haven't seen the Tarantino movie yet. I haven't seen Little Women. And there's maybe one more I haven't seen.
So the, the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for Tarantino, but anyway, Schulze,
I'll go to you now, TC. Now, what did being a Adam Sandler full super fan, and I call you a super fan just because you did admit that you've seen all of those films on Netflix. I am not going to let you get away without being that recorded.
Never going to let me live that down. No. I once watched one that was like, it was the Adam Sandler, whatever. You're fine. I'm a super fan. I have him tattooed across my chest, life size. He's just perpetually hugging me. My chest hair is his facial hair. It's everything I want. Similar to you, Schulze, in Uncut Gems, I heard Sandler had a movie coming out. Didn't even give it a second thought. But then when the Oscar buzz started coming around, I was like, really? What is happening?
Yep.
Dolemite Is My Name had an Oscar buzz around. So Eddie Murphy's back. What is going on here? And I was fascinated by the possibility that it could be as good as everyone said it was, because I am a fan of Uncut Gems, or not Uncut Gems. Well, yes, I'm of Punch Drunk Love, and even Spanglish shows his dramatic side. Even Funny People shows what Adam Sandler's capable of. So it wasn't so shocking to think that, okay, he's done this before. He's done movies that aren't Adam Sandler movies. Mm-hmm. So going into this, I was anticipating this to live up to the hype, and there was a lot of hype around this. So that's what I came into this with. Was like, all right, show me Adam Sandler's Oscar-worthy performance. Let's see this. Let's see what we got here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was me.
I thought his performance in this film was just it was Oscar nomination worthy at least. Mm-hmm. But which is somewhat surprising, because I think someone like Adam Sandler, he's taken a few chances in his career, but he always defaults onto the money makers.
Goes back to Grown Ups and his
always
Happy Madison movies.
Yep. Always. He has taken more chances than than some of the comedians in the same like Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell doesn't take.
I mean, he's taken a couple, but not like Punch Drunk Love.
No, Everything Must Go, Stranger Than Fiction, and Matilda would be the three occasions I can think Will Ferrell like showed what he was capable of beyond his typical fare.
Yeah, typical Ferrell.
Nah. Should have said that. Edit this.
Yeah, we'll rewrite it. Okay, now say it.
Typical Ferrell.
Yeah. Oh, nice one.
Crushed it.
Do you have a writer? That's great.
I'm on fire.
So let's get into this film a little bit. Who would like to give a little bit of a synopsis of it?
But a synopsis? Julia, do you want to give a synopsis here?
I'd be happy to. So Adam Sandler plays Howard, who runs a diamond store on, I guess there's like a diamond street in New York City.
The Diamond District.
The Diamond District. And so he's a jeweler. I think it's important to say he is a Jewish jeweler who's running this store. And he has a family with an estranged wife who is played by... Which character was she in Frozen? Adina Menzel?
It's Idina Menzel who plays Elsa. Menzel. Yeah.
Elsa is his estranged wife.
I thought
wife.
It was Idina Menzel.
Right.
Whatever Travolta screwed up with.
Yeah. Screwed up. And then he has a girlfriend named Julia, played by the incredible Julia Fox, which was like, this was her first fucking film. Oh, sorry, swears. It's like her first film. Anyway, Kevin Garnett, which I really want to talk about that whole piece, comes in, and I should say this opal is mined from a mine in Ethiopia that Howard has purchased, and he shows it to Kevin Garnett, and Kevin Garnett says, I need to see this. There's so many things that are going on. The major plot that I've even gotten to yet is he owes Arno $100,000, and he is a gambling addict, so he's going to try to win this money back. And in the middle of the film, you find out that Arno is indeed his brother-in-law, which is insane.
That was a great little twist in the middle there. Spoilers up front.
Spoilers. Yeah, you guys should probably just say there probably might be some spoilers in this film. And then we see The Weeknd. The Weeknd's in this film.
Yes.
He's so good.
He's so good. And so basically, Howard has to pay his brother-in-law off by making other bets through the whole film. And there's a lot of pressure and a lot of other things happening. And he's put in a time constraint to auction this opal, which he thinks is $1 million. Like, he's going to get millions of dollars. And he doesn't. And he keeps losing money. And he has this, like, breakdown where he's like, I'm such a loser. I'm not good at anything. And then I don't want to give the end away, but mm-hmm. it all comes to a head in the jewelry store with Arno and the bodyguards who are chasing him.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a breakup. There's a reunion. Yeah.
You'll laugh. You'll cry. You'll wish people would just shut up for 5 seconds and everyone talk individually.
Could you just be quiet and turn the music down? Yeah.
You talk, I talk. You talk, I talk. Let's do
that. Right. Why is everyone talking at the same time? Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely did happen. Mm-hmm. Good job. Good synopsis.
So good.
Good, concise. Yeah. That was a good synopsis.
That brings us to this week's sponsor. It is Vegas Sports Bets, R Us. You know what? I line them up, and this just happens to line up at this time. So I'm sorry about this. So let me just read the copy, and then we can get moving. VegasSportsBet.com is your place to bet the farm, the house, everything that you own in order to try to win that girlfriend, that wife, and get back Kevin Garnett's ring.
This is a very specific ad.
It just happened. Yeah, it just happened that way. So
it's like they're speaking to me.
Yeah, it's a very family-friendly type of place, too. You know, they do allow underage betting. You can't use real money. You have to use your parents' money. But it works. It works.
It's Monopoly money?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you want to parlay, you know, bet on the opening tip, bet on who gets the first rebound, and bet on who gets the first free throw, No better place than this.
This is like amazing.
I'm sorry if I'm interrupting the copy, but the stress of me betting like $50 in Vegas is like endless to me. To imagine betting like hundreds of thousands of dollars, that people do this, that this is like, this is not out of the realm of reality. It's people literally do. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, no, I, no,
and,
no.
And the, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I suppose the part I didn't mention is what he's betting on is that Kevin Garnett, who believes the opal is a good luck charm, is going to win this game and all these great things are going to happen.
Yeah, because Kevin Garnett thinks it's magic.
There's a lot of delusional thinking going on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But magical thinking. Anyway.
Boy.
It was a very stressful movie. I think we've all kind of, I mean, not only with all the shouting, but it's very fast paced. It moves because it's kind of like you're in his mind, right?
Yes.
Because he's always that trying to think a couple steps ahead. How can I make this money? How can I do this? How can I do that? How can I parlay this?
And he's not good at it. I want to say that he is the truest of gambler representations, and that he is lucky. That's it.
Yeah.
His success anywhere in this movie is all pure luck.
Right.
The diamond encrusted Furbies, that was genius.
Why wasn't he selling more of those?
That was genius.
It was 2012, so you know the Furbies were hot back then.
Yeah.
You don't remember.
Yeah, if you don't remember, you're probably too young to be listening to this, so.
What's a Furby? Who are you and why you're listening to this podcast? Yeah. You should not be watching Uncut Gems.
Which, by the way, is on Netflix right now. So, now that we've given that, it's on Netflix. So, if you haven't seen it, pause this podcast, watch it, and then come back. Mm. So, now we can talk spoilers.
Great.
Good.
Fantastic.
Well, if I may.
Yes, you may.
There's plenty to praise about this movie. These guys are very young directors. Good Times is the other one that they did that's got a lot of critical acclaim. We didn't mention the Duplass brothers earlier, but I mentioned them now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mentioned them now because the Duplass brothers pretty much popularized, if not invented, mumblecore, which which is very improv-y. Here's what the scene's about. Just yell at each other. Talk to each other. And the Safdie brothers seem to have a similar style, just in way more tense of a situation. Because a lot of these scenes felt like, hey, you know, what's the written word on the page? We need to get that, but however we get it is fine. I think of when Julia and Howie are breaking up at the cab. It's like, you know what? I bet they filmed this by just hailing an actual cab and having a screaming match in the middle of the street. And that poor cabbie didn't know what was going on. But it was a lot of crosstalk, and it was I found the screenplay is available online if you want to read it, and the screenplay is pretty tight. It's a tight screenplay, and it's a well plotted movie. It's a lot of the beat. It's very well written in that regard. But I just had anxiety watching people talk, yell at each other. Like, what? Why are you answering the phone of your doctor calling and putting him on speakerphone while this dude is rummaging through your safe screaming at you and you have these thugs trying to get in? It was so, like, you're an idiot, Howie. Just everyone just stop and take a breath. Like, it was frustrating to watch in that regard. So if you can't handle crosstalk for 2 hours and 15 minutes, probably don't watch this probably movie.
And like what I thought they did such an amazing job of is the beginning of the film, they have this like really heavy soundtrack playing. So you sort of can't hear them. Yeah. Right. And I'm like, what? I just like, could they just turn it down? But I got, you know, I understood that like, this was how they were building this tension and this anxiety is like, they're just going to build this and build this. And then like the jewelry store seems purposely tight.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people. Oh. Yeah. And then the super bright lights, right? So it's just jarring to the senses. It's visually jarring. It's auditorily jarring. And then you're like, I mean, I was anxious immediately. I rewatched the beginning and the end today. And I'm like, Kurt, they just got done with the opening credits and I'm already like sweating. And I'm like, whole bunch of stuff happened before they finish
the credits. The
opening credits. Like, he's on the street. He's already been in the... It's, like, already happened. And he's going to make a bet. And, like, the opening credits. And then he goes back and Garnett's there. I'm like, oh, my God.
This has a very late in his career Tony Scott feel. If you look at something like Man on Fire and State of Play. Like, no, that's Ridley Scott. But, like, Tony Scott has a very kinetic, like... It's like you're being just grabbed by the front of your shirt and shook. But it also had a lot of, I feel this movie would be a cleaner, friendlier movie in a lot of regards if it was a Michael Mann movie, because it did feel like late career Michael Mann. You could look at Heat, but you could also look at Collateral and see where he took his career. And that's a compliment to the Safdie brothers to tap into that the kinetic energy of Tony Scott and the unsettling reality of Michael Mann and like mashing those together. And again, if that's not your thing, you're going to hate this movie. This is a very frustrating and anxious film. But if you like to be taken for a ride, then buckle up, cause you're going to be shook.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just the one thing I read is it took them 10 years to write the script, which I think shows because they really wanted to create that tension. And interestingly enough, they showed this script to Sandler's agent in 2009, and the agent didn't even show it to Sandler. And then they finally brought it 10 years later in, and Jonah Hill was supposed to play Howie.
Yeah.
And then Hill dropped out, and they approached Sandler again.
Well,
another
name that was actually mentioned was Leonardo DiCaprio to play Howard.
Oh, no. It would have been awful.
But he was already tied up. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So he wasn't able to play. Which, I mean, you know, I think the Jonah Hill, Adam Sandler playing that Jewish jeweler, you know.
That's way
better.
It's suited for that type. Yes. Leo would have done well. Again, actually, if Tony Scott or Michael Mann had directed this movie, then that would have been ripe for a Leo role maybe 15 years ago. But it would have just felt like Leo trying, like, just give me an Oscar, please.
Right.
Oh, he already had it by this time.
I know he had it by this point, but it would have felt like that.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that the brothers based the character loosely on their father, who worked in this diamond district, and one of the things they're trying to convey in this film is learning through suffering, which is a Jewish theme, and that was what was brought to light. And so when I was reading about the movie and the script a little bit, was this idea of like if you're gonna and. TC, I thought of the 48 we did about like the moral to the story, right? Yes. And I was like, he should have watched this and he would have known that this isn't going to end well for him. Yeah, but that basically if the brothers were like, we want to take this idea, this Jewish idea with the tradition. I mean, it was very traditional. They had the Jewish dinner and the blessings and things like that. And say, we want to create a film about suffering through learning, this Jewish suffering through learning. So let's cast Jewish actors. I think they did a great job and show this happen to Howie. And you take this gambling addiction, this like, Kurt was like, why does he do this? I said, it's the high. Did you see him? He's like so high, right?
Yeah.
And after crying and, you know, after crying and being like, I'm this loser. And my wife says I'm annoying. And she's like, I wish I never see your face again. Like, you know, and then the girlfriend comes back. So I thought that was all of that is like really, really cool.
The casting in this is great. The setting of it is great. It has such a raw, realistic feel to it. I can't imagine Leo doing it. I don't think so either.
I'm
sure he would have been fine, but I it's one of those things where it's, when you line up the pieces just right, you get something.
Yeah,
that could be deemed special in some regards.
So I thought it was interesting, like going to 2012, right? Because you can bring in somebody like Kevin Garnett to play himself, and he still he doesn't look as old as he is.
Oh my God!
Yeah, they could use the old NBA.
They could use the old NBA footage. It fits.
Brilliant. Okay, yeah,
you wanted to talk about Kevin Garnett, Julia. Yeah. I go right ahead because worth talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting is that, you know, they started writing this script in 2009, and you really need a bunch of things to happen in order to make this a go, which is that, well, we need Garnett to have a great game so we can get the parlay. Gee, we better get Kevin Garnett. Well, what if Kevin Garnett didn't want to do the movie? So then they're going to, like, I think the amount of research to really tighten the story to get someone like Kevin Garnett, and when I say someone like Kevin Garnett, I mean like an athlete who had this great game. Well, if Garnett was like, no, I don't want to be in a movie. And then what if he had been a bad actor? He wasn't. Yeah. He was really good. Then the movie would have fallen apart. So I think, too, from a production perspective, this movie was brilliant. And then they brought The Weeknd in, who is just like no one knew him either.
It's incredible to me when athletes prove to be quite good actors. LeBron James proved himself to be a very good comedic actor in Trainwreck, playing himself.
Ray Allen.
Yep. So it's great to see Kevin Garnett later now, like post his great career, to be able to come in and like play himself again back a few years and get involved in this.
Yeah.
And oh my God, I'm sitting here watching there's the scene where Sandler's placing the last bet with Kevin Garnett sitting there. I'm like, stop talking to him about this. Yeah. This is so illegal right now. You cannot, you can. And even he knew, he's like, you can't be showing me this, but.
So, yeah.
Thinking of them doing that while he was still playing.
Right.
Did you
really pressure. No pressure.
Well, so they, the Safdie brothers were huge. They grew up in New York, so they're huge Nick fans. The original script had Amari Stoudemire as the player.
Okay.
But I think with everything involved in the footage, the Boston Celtics, and Philadelphia series going on then, like it worked out so well.
That's a great pivot to, plus, so like you said, Julia, to have all those things lined up to originally write it for one athlete and then be like, okay, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
Who can we make this
and,
work for?
You know, and Kevin Garnett is a bigger name. Kevin Garnett was one of the biggest stars in the NBA for a long time. Right. So he's a more well-known. I mean, there's very few NBA players that you could get that played at that time that would be that popular that you could get. Like, you couldn't get a LeBron James to play that role because
– no.
He's still active as a player. You know, Shaq doesn't seem the right actor for this this role.
You know, he peaked at Steel. Let's leave it there, everyone. Yeah. He's proven what he's capable of.
Yeah, so, you know, and I'm sure there are other, like Paul Pierce and some others, but getting Kevin Garnett, I mean, that was a critical get. And, you know, he was one of the stars of those games. That was actual game footage that they pulled into here. So he did do those things. Obviously, you can write it that way. So, like, you know.
Right.
But, yeah.
But then I was to the part I hadn't thought about, which I should have, because I'd done this for a living, is then we have to secure the rights from the Celtics and the NBA and the Sixers and get permission to use that footage. And noticing, too, that so many of the shots on Garnett did not have any of the other players. You couldn't see their faces because otherwise
you have to get the rights
and all of that. And so what if the NBA was like, no, can't do it, sorry, and what would they have been able to do then? And it certainly wouldn't have been as good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having it set so close to an actual reality that this could literally have happened and we didn't know about it back in 2012.
Right.
So that's cool. That's really special, like that, as far as an A24 indie production to get those things to line up.
Right.
You got to be impressive looking at strictly from a production point of view and a writing point of view. That's cool.
Well, and there were a couple little things I want to point out. Well, at least one little thing that the Safdie brothers did. The, you know, trying to get real reactions out of their actors. So I think there's a lot of guided improv, shall we say, like you mentioned, TC. So the glass breaking.
When Garnett was leaning on it, it shattered. Yeah.
So that was set up with a small charge, so they controlled when that broke. And they didn't tell any of the actors that it was going to break.
Okay, wow.
So that reaction from all of them is like their genuine reaction, and how they played that with Adam Sandler kept saying, I told him not to lean on it. I told Garnett, being Howard. In that, I think speaks to, you know, again, a little bit more of Adam Sandler's capabilities instead of, you know, thinking, again, back to Billy Madison. And
And you never see, I think, the shtick with Adam Sandler, you never see it in this film. It's just not there.
No.
Maybe when you see, because we watch the scene where his wife is wearing her bat mitzvah dress.
Bat mitzvah dress,
Still fits her. And so then he's broken up with his girlfriend. That whole scene was amazing. And so he's trying to get her to win her back. And he's like smiling with his little teeth. And I was like, how did she not break character? But then she does start laughing because he looks ridiculous.
He looks so stupid.
You look so stupid. The amount of contempt in her voice. You annoy me. I never want to see you again. It's like, oh my God. So that like tiny bit of that look on his face.
Honestly, she's not wrong. She had every right to say all of it.
All of it.
As far as I could tell, there was nothing like a lot of despicable characters and people in this movie.
Yes.
And I didn't see anything in Idina Menzel's character of like, well, why did he throw this away? She's a very domineering woman, but like, she's clearly out of his league. So, so I don't blame her for laughing in his face. And and when I love when they have to stop at the apartment, and she just has the look of pure, she's decided everything in that car. And she's just like, your dad's going to stop at the apartment. And she's just looking forward. Like she's done. She's over it.
She's so over it. Yeah. She's so out. In some ways I was surprised she went and got him out of the car.
Maybe
it's mostly because
out of concern. It looked like she had some concern running out there trying to save him, and he's just sitting there naked in his trunk.
It's like, it's good now. I'm just gonna get dressed and I'll be right in.
Just gonna go ahead and put this sweatsuit on for my daughter's play. Oh my God!
How messed up is his older son going to be? His younger son clearly was like, Dad doesn't love me. And that sucks, and I feel so bad for the younger son to have to experience it. But his older son is screwed.
Yeah, the one that's looking up to him, and
already yeah. placing bets and like yeah. cursing at him and just yeah, no good. And looking at the Jewish tradition of Passover, when the kids are all searching, his younger son is the one who finds the hidden treasure. Yeah, and is like, my boy, and that hopefully means his younger son is going to survive this part of his life. Like he's young enough to get out of this.
Yeah,
where his older son, I feel, is going to be having some troubles.
Yep.
Yeah. It to see what. You know, I love where they ended it, right? I mean, they ended it, so it ends with Howard being killed.
Yeah.
And Howard had to be killed in this film. There is no way to end this film without Howard dead. Without mm-hmm. For this film to have the impact that it has, Howard has to die, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, yeah. So... he dies, and they only show, like, the next half hour of the world in which Howard was mm-hmm. in. They show his girlfriend leaving the casino with, you know, $1.75 million or whatever it was. They yep. show his son talking about his dad proudly and how he met yep. Kevin Garnett and just how... I'm interested to know, what does it look like when Julia gets back? She's got two yeah. things full of money. Those guys are gone, right? I mean, they cleaned out the jewelry store. There's two dead bodies in there. They're gone. What is she, I mean, what does she do?
There is a yeah. possibility that they leave someone there for her yes. to wait for her. That's probably more likely. But
well, I would think the police would be coming. The police would be on their way.
The police are going to come. So she has to, like, Kurt and I had talked about this too. Like, she has to wait it out long enough to, in order to be safe for the cops to show up at the jewelry yeah. store. And then if I were her, I'd get the hell out of New York City.
With them.
Take the money. Take that money and get out.
So maybe.
Never look back.
Also, the other thing is, like, can we talk about how Eric Bogrosian doesn't seem to age? He looks the same as he did 10 years ago. And I just got to say, the look on his face after Howard, because he doesn't have hardly any lines in this movie.
No.
The look on his face mm-hmm. when Phil shoots Howie and he's like, I made a big fuck. Like, I maybe played my hand too hard here. Like, these are not the right guys. This was like, I... like, he pushed it too far, and it's this yeah. dawning of, like, I just got my brother-in-law shot, and now I'm going to... And that, I thought the remorse that he showed in that moment, and then he gets killed, too, and I yeah. kind of deserved it. That I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
And the man hasn't aged, so...
yeah. yeah, the...
Like,
the,
Kevin Garnett hasn't aged.
No.
Right? Kevin Garnett looks the same.
Yeah, the remorse there, that last moment, that moment, it hits hard. Like, there is no celebrating with him, even when he wins what he wins, because mm-hmm. you spend the whole movie, every scene, you're holding your breath for shit to hit the fan from
yeah.
the beginning. Like you said, mm-hmm. Julia, the credits aren't even finished rolling as things are already tense.
Yeah.
And every scene in this movie, at least for me, I'm sitting there going, what's going to go wrong? Like, when he's hiding in the closet and Julia's there, I'm like, she's going to come with another man. What's
yes,
in the
that's
bag?
What I thought
she's
too. Through.
And
yeah.
then it's like, oh, okay, nothing happened. All right, next yeah. scene. Here yeah. we go.
yes.
And so that final scene, the way it ends, you're right, Chris, that it had to end that way.
It had to end yeah. that way.
And yet, yeah. still, it's like a punch to the gut when it happens.
Yeah, I mean, I felt as though, like, I had mixed feelings. Like, I didn't know if I wanted to see Howard win or lose. Mm-hmm. You know, part of me wanted to see him lose and just hit that rock bottom and then just be done. Like,
probably get killed too.
Yeah. Oh like, yeah. Yeah.
Get thrown out the window like he was
yeah.
almost.
Yeah.
Man, my assumption was some sort of ambiguity of like sitting there facing his doom, and we don't get to see the end result of that.
Sure.
because that from a writer perspective, as I'm sitting here trying to, okay, I think I can see where this is going to go, analyzing the film, having an ambiguous ending where it is the luck of the draw. He may have failed here. He didn't win the bet. He's face to face with his doom. Can he get out of it? Well, place your bets. Roll credits. That's where I thought it would go. But it seemed likely to me that blood was going to get shed sooner or later.
He could have simply opened up that second door.
And let him go.
Yeah, just let him out. Yeah. Like, after they see that he wins, he's like, all right, now you can go.
Well, honestly, we could see from the get that
he can't
want to show off.
Right.
It wasn't about like, yes, hey, we won, I'll see you later. It's like, look at this opal. No, I can't sell it to you. Look at this watch. No, don't take that watch. Look at this ring. Make sure I get that back. Like, he has to.
Yeah, because
taking pictures of the money, showing off Kevin Garnett to his son. Like, this guy cannot help himself.
Nope, because had he, the one thing in this film, the one action that caused everything else to happen was showing the opal to Kevin Garnett. If he never did that, if he held onto that opal and didn't show Kevin Garnett, none of this would have happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. He did die. The one thing that's interesting is he died being like, I fucking did it. Boom. Right. So he died happy.
There's a smile on his dead face.
With a smile on his face. Like,
yeah.
And that was, I normally don't like endings like this. I'm always rooting for him. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's like, he needed to die. Like, that's that ending is exactly right. Because here's what he's going to do. He's going to screw it up again.
Yeah,
like, yeah, absolutely. He might give Arnold the money. He's going to get the shit kicked out of him. He's going to break up with his girlfriend. Right. It's just going to, like, repeat over and over again. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, he could have closed his store and gotten the $100,000. Yeah. Hello, he's in a jewelry store with probably $1 million worth of inventory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
he died doing what he loves.
Winning. Yep, and he won.
He won
the whole. So,
ugh.
TC.
Well, I will say, I honestly, this movie is not fun to watch.
No.
This Mm-mm. movie will not make you feel good watching it. These people Mm-mm. are gross. This lifestyle is gross. This whole situation is gross. It's uncomfortable to watch. It's frustrating. It makes me so anxious. Mm-hmm. But I can't deny the craft of this film being as good as it is. I cannot deny the quality of this type of movie. A24, man, you see that label, you are going to get a certain type, if not the best, independent film quality right there.
Mm-hmm.
Blumhouse may have the money model down, but A24 has got the quality model down.
The thing I was going to ask you, TC, I guess, is too, like, how do you as a director create that level of tension? Because that's what blew me away was I noticed we're in a ton of wide shots. There wasn't like sweeping images, like everything was tight. Everyone's like a medium or a close up. Obviously the lighting and stuff, but like, it to me is one of the best films I've ever seen of like immediately ratcheting it up so much anxiety. And I was reading the script a little bit and I'm like, this script isn't that like I expected the script to have the same feeling.
It doesn't. And it doesn't. It's very simply, it's good. It's like, good. It's a very tight script, but it doesn't have, certainly Schulze might have some thoughts on this as well.
Yeah.
But from a directing perspective, for me, it's the reality of just the crosstalk, like people talking over each other, never listening, never letting, like that sort of level of frustration feels uncomfortably real. So when you get to the action, which is, okay, we're going to throw Adam Sandler in this fountain here. It's going to be a stunt, but it's going to feel as raw as the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Having the choreographed madness that is a lot of the movement and dialogue of this film.
Yeah.
Just being constant creates, for me at least, that's created the tension in watching it, and that's what I would try to create directing. It's a lot of, funny enough, no pun intended, uncut scenes where you're especially, you know, coming from one person to another, and the camera just trying to find the action and the madness, and that goes to that figurative shaking that you're getting. It's that to me is what creates so much tension. Mm-hmm. And credit to, you mentioned it earlier, the soundtrack,
yeah.
the score of this being, it's very tonal and visceral. And I would almost bet, I can't think of the term right now. There's a term in sound design where it actually, it's frequencies you can't hear, but you feel. And like, the best example I can think of this is Marilyn Manson's score for the original Resident Evil, because he laced that entire score with all these atonal sounds that upset you without realizing it. And the, and
that
the
sounds
way,
lovely.
The way you can discover that, the way composers find this, at least how Marilyn Manson did it and another composer whose name escapes me right now, is they'll play with frequencies until their dog gets upset. They'll see the dog react to something. Okay, there's a frequency. I can't hear it, but so I'm going to feel it. And yeah, so all of that combined. So the score, the talking and moving.
The one other thing.
Chris, what do you think?
Well, the one other thing I would add to that would be the editor did such a good job just doing those very quick cuts to build up that tension. And some awkward cuts too. Like you know, cutting in places where you know you wouldn't expect it. So it's kind of building some of that. You know, and the camera angles that we have for, especially in the jewelry store, for those frenetic scenes are awkward angles. So they're it's, as viewing it, it's like, I want to see more, and it's building as you're hearing all the crosstalk. You're doing all this, and you can't.
Trying to see around.
So visually trying to do what the crosstalk is doing, where you're not able to focus on what you should focus on.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that level of the editing there, and to go from script to screen, it's upsetting, whether you realize it or not, to not see certain scenes. Mm-hmm. Because he'll like, okay, I finally got the gem. And then we just cut to dinner. Oh, he dropped the gem off. We didn't get to see that scene.
Yeah.
You never get to see Allison, the woman who like screwed him over for the auction. You never get to see her.
Never get to see Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
That's Tilda Swinton.
Awesome.
Nice.
Not getting to see certain scenes, not get to see see a certain character, whether you realize it or not, subconsciously, that's upsetting. Like, I'm like, why do I feel uncomfortable right now? Oh, it's because we just jumped ahead a weird amount of time. So.
Nice. Man,
I can't believe this didn't get any Oscar nominations.
I know.
None. Editing,
none, like not even for screenplay, right? Screenplay, even edit, all of those things. And it won a lot of awards. It was nominated for a lot of awards. I mean, you just go in and it's like a whole list of things.
I do wonder what, you know. So you know, A24. I'm trying to think some of the big films that they've had. I know they've had a lot of good films, but maybe they're just not in the Oscar campaign business yet. You know what I mean? Like,
it is a game.
It is a game to get it out there. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why there's only been one foreign film ever to win, and that just happened in a year when you know, the political statement is all about, you know, foreigners and trying, you know, acceptance and things like that. So
I will say that A24 is in the Oscar game. They produced Moonlight.
Okay.
And The Lighthouse.
Midsummer,
which got a lot of...
And Midsummer.
Moonlight didn't win. I ended the Oscars.
I meant to say La La Land.
Yeah, La La Land won. I turned it off at that point because I'm like, okay.
I was on the phone with you, Schulze, because I was traveling, so I couldn't watch the Oscars. So Schulze is giving me the play-by-play of that Moonlight at La La Land moment. I'll always remember that.
It was the craziest moment.
Yeah, no. Yeah, A24 has, I mean, Ex Machina, but Room. They're in the Oscar business.
Okay.
They also had Lady Lady Bird, The Florida Project. Yeah.
I did see an article, an anonymous, someone who wanted to keep their anonymity, Academy of Arts and Science member who discussed why Uncut Gems didn't get anything, who discussed why Eddie Murphy wasn't nominated for Best Actor, specifically the Adam Sandler-Eddie Murphy situation. And this guy said very candidly as a long-term Academy member, when we see someone trying this hard, we don't want to give them a nomination. Mm-hmm. And that's really a shitty thing to say, but it's true. They saw Eddie Murphy trying too hard, and they said, you know, he hosted SNL, and he's making his, we don't care. And yeah. Adam Sandler, they couldn't forgive him for his actual career. But they said, the producer said, look, you're right. Adam Sandler gave a great performance, and maybe he will get nominated if he does it again. And that's a very raw and awful thing to say. But the Academy is a game. The awards, that, especially right. the Oscars, though that's the Super Bowl of movie of awards, mm-hmm. that's why you got to look more to the Independent Film Awards, the Spirit Awards, even the BBC, the British awards.
BAFTAs.
All the other ones. The BAFTAs, yeah. All those other awards tend to hold more credibility. And so, look, yeah, Julia's right. Look at the Wikipedia or the IMDb of the amount of awards Uncut Gems was just nominated for, not necessarily won. Because films that aren't Hollywood acceptable or mainstream audience acceptable, and this is not mainstream audience acceptable, from a film lover's perspective, from a cinephile, from filmmaker's perspective, this is the kind of movie that I feel you can watch and respect and love. And honestly, to just keep crediting A24 for picking films so mm-hmm. well, this is a great example of that, Moonlight being another. Ghost Story is another great one. Room. Yeah.
To be
Room. Ex Machina. Yeah, I mean, Ex Machina was fantastic.
All these amazing films that aren't mainstream, that aren't, you're not going to, this is not, oh, okay, Avengers is sold out. What should we see? Oh, I hear Uncut Gems is good. It's a new Adam Sandler movie. Oh. Is he going to talk like this? No. Okay, let's just go home.
So, Adam Sandler was nominated for a Razzie.
Not for this, though.
Yes, for this. For the Redeemer Award.
Oh, that's right. The Razzies created a new award this year. Yep. The Redeemer Award.
And he lost to Eddie Murphy.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
Oh,
no.
So,
that's funny.
Yeah.
In general, this movie is for a specific type of film watcher. As I sat down to watch it, I was watching with a friend of mine, and she's like, I can't watch this. I'm leaving. She left. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm out. You're on your own. And as frustrating as it was to watch, as I mentioned before, I couldn't stop watching it. I couldn't.
Right.
I had.
Well, it's a train wreck. He's a train wreck. You know, it's a car crash. Yeah. You're going to watch it because you're like, how is this?
Yeah.
How is this going to end out? Where's this going to go?
Right.
You know, like this type of film, I thought it was a good film. I don't know I could watch it again.
No.
I don't think I would either. Yeah.
I'd recommend
it. I already have.
Yeah.
Julia.
I'm
cleaning the house. Let's throw Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah. Okay. I want to feel good about myself. I want to watch 12 Years a Slave.
Never watch Requiem. You guys, after I watched Requiem for a Dream, I was like, I don't think my life is ever going to be the same again.
Oh, my God. I have to say this just because it's an anecdote worth saying. People recommended Requiem for a Dream for me for so long, and another movie for so long, that one night I'm like, I'm going to do a double feature. I watched Requiem for a Dream back to back with Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, my God.
I was wrecked.
Wait, which one did you watch second?
I watched Requiem for a Dream and then Shawshank.
Okay, at least your ending.
At least got the uplifting ending, but I was just emotionally wrecked right now. If I'd been the other way.
Oh gosh. Yeah, I don't. You wouldn't be the same person.
There's still scenes from Requiem from a Dream that I can never forget. I'm like, I just don't want to think about them. And I pop into my head. I'm like, oh my God.
Well, just to make this segue back into Uncut Gems, Marlon Wayans was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Requiem for a Dream. So it's incredible to see someone like Adam Sandler, who has this notoriously long comedic, I'm throwing that in quotes, career, to be able to prove himself capable of such a dramatic, intense film. Yeah. And I think that comes down to, in my opinion, comedy is harder than drama. If you are great at comedy, you can pull off drama, because comedy is all about the timing and the delivery and the intent of the joke. And taking all that and applying it to drama gives us some incredible performances.
I think
Eddie Murphy for I am Dolemite.
I think
Dolemite is my name, isn't it?
I think you can look at Steve Martin's career of where it started, because he started with like the Adam Sandler type of film, you know, The Man with Two Brains, The Jerk, you know, all that. And then he veered into like Parenthood and started taking dramedy roles. And you know, now, well, I mean, he's virtually retired now, but he could do any role. Yeah, he could be cast into anything. I think what hurts Adam Sandler the most, and where the Oscar, the Academy person was getting to, is what we talked about before, how Adam Sandler always falls back to what makes him money. Always.
Yeah.
He'll take a chance. He'll do a Punch Drunk Love. He'll do a Uncut Gems. But you know his next film is going to be starring David Spade, Rob Schneider, and Chris Rock. You know,
his buddies.
Most of the time they're all sitting around a fire. And it was 8 hours of filming, but they condensed it down to 20 minutes of the best stuff. That's going to be, you know, those are going to be his next films.
You make a point. If he was committed to pursuing roles like this and putting his comedic life behind him, we probably could see more turns from him of this level. But you go where your passions lie. He likes making movies with his friends, and I don't blame him for that. Yeah. I do too. There are certainly actors who have turned their back, not turned their back, but wanted to move away from what they were known for,
right?
And proven themselves more capable of it. Jonah Hill, mentioned earlier, is a two-time Academy Award nominated actor for Moneyball and Wolf of Wall Street, and he's incredible. And that took that took him breaking away from his stoner comedies. And breaking away from
the group,
yeah, and being made fun of for being the fat funny guy, and just being like, honestly, it's worth looking up. There's a great, it's not a TED Talk. It's some sort of interview with Jonah Hill talking about just how hard it was to constantly be made fun of. He comes from comedy, but it became so cruel to him to constantly be told, "Hey, you're the fat guy. You're the fat funny guy. Be the fat funny guy," and he couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
And he suffered some severe depression from that. And it was the friendship of Emma Stone and Channing Tatum that led him to being friends with Leo and moving on from there to later in his career. And it could be encouragement from Adam Sandler to say, do more of this. And he might be hearing that from plenty of people, but at the end of the day, he might just be like, I like doing this.
Or it's based on the scripts that I get, and in the meantime, I'm going to keep making comedies. He's part of it. I have no idea, by the way, but the film was filmed in New York. He lives in New York with his family, so he's got daughters who I think are, like, school age. And for him, too, it could be about, like, the script was amazing. I have the acting chops, but also I got to go home at the end of the day, and I wasn't away from my family for too long. And he has the luxury of doing that, and I think... Yeah. I think helps. Too, like how the Oscars, to your point, are so, it's so political that Adam Sandler maybe believes like, I'll never win an Oscar and I don't care because it's so staged. Like, I don't, that's, he might just like to that. He's like, I want to make movies with David Spade. I don't give a shit because I make millions of dollars. So fuck all of you. Yeah. Right. Then I get an awesome script and do Uncut Gems. Great.
He may not want to be a part of a club that would have him as a member.
Right.
To use the Groucho Marx quote.
His next film, his next full-length film follow-up to this is called Hubby Halloween.
Jennifer Aniston.
Kevin James.
Oh, no.
Starring Rob Schneider. Starring Kenan Thompson, Maya Rudolph, Julie Bowen, Tim Meadows,
Happy Madison, Happy Gilmore, Julie Bowen.
Yep, Shaquille O'Neal is in it, so he's sticking with the basketball.
We do not need to hear about you. You could literally be making this up right now, and I'm not going to fact check it. And no one listening is going to fact check it. So you can just stop right now.
Well, this is all true. I think we should. So this is his next film. So again, you know, I like you guys said, we can't fault him for that. I mean, for some actors like Leo, mm-hmm. for him to justify his career in Hollywood, he had to win an Oscar. Mm-hmm. He had to, like, that was a goal he set forth for himself. And he kept taking on roles and after role, pushing himself, and that's what he wanted to do. And he got his Oscar. Adam Sandler, I don't think anyone's saying he's as good of an actor as Leonardo DiCaprio or would take the same risks as Leonardo DiCaprio. He's obviously can do those roles. And
if he wants to.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, so a new Adam Sandler movie comes out. Has your opinion of him changed at all? Would you, you know, where we all talked about before seeing this, we all had not much interest in it. And Adam Sandler being part of it was a big reason. Mm-hmm. New Adam, Hubby Halloween comes out. Where are you on a scale of 1 to 10?
No.
I admittedly watch them all tattooed to my body the whole night. No, I have zero interest in.
I
don't want to watch an Adam Sandler movie, but I would definitely watch another movie that he's in if it was of this caliber from a director that directors like this from a film of this quality, of Uncut Gems quality. I'm interested in seeing another Adam Sandler role like this, but I have zero interest in wasting my time on an Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
It's similar to the best Will Ferrell movie is Stranger Than Fiction. That's the best movie he's in. The best Will Ferrell movie? Well, I don't know. Talladega Nights.
Old school. Yeah, I think Talladega.
Yeah. Okay, good. I'm not alone in that.
What am I going to do with my hands? Yeah.
All right. So
I think it's important that we talk about Julia Fox for a moment. We haven't talked about the girlfriend.
Yeah.
Too much, but I just want to say this was her debut film.
Well, no, that is not correct.
She, according to Wikipedia, it is.
She was in The Great American Mud Wrestle, which was a short film where she played the bride.
All right, feature film debut, how's it?
There we go. But she's actually a... she launched a successful women's knitwear with her friend, and then she posed in Playboy, but then she also is a painter and a photographer, and she's self-published 2 books of photography.
Wow, like, that's amazing. Wow, what a renaissance woman.
Right, she'd met one of the brothers and had known them for 10 years.
Wow, that's incredible. Well, so, good for she held her own in this. Held her own. Like, she'd been doing this her whole, like, for years. I would never have guessed that she was someone so fresh to the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was fantastic. Okay.
So to watch with her.
So, TC, you do another podcast called The Studio Demands It.
Thank you for the plug.
Yep. So, I don't know how this is going to work, and you can have me edit this out if you want to. I'm not going to, but you can ask me to.
Okay.
Uncut Gems 2. Julia's story.
What does she do after that?
Around
the run. Yeah, this is a movie of like a series of gambles constantly moving and grooving. I'd pick it up right where this, like her showing up, police surrounding the building. She's not sure what to do. Makes a phone call to some connection. That connection's like, you got the money? You got what? What's going on? She's like, I need to run. I need to get out of town. Where can I go? And then the tip-off begins. She's in town. She's got a bag of $1.75 million. She has nowhere to go, nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, baby. And she hits the ground running. It's a night of or a number of days just trying to get the hell out of New York and one bad thing after another happening to her. So similar vibe, similar kinetic style to it. That'd be my – there's my quick pitch right there off the top of my head.
All right, Julia.
Oh, I'd have her. I'd let her get away.
All right, Julia, yeah. Would you produce that?
Heck yeah, I'd produce that. Also, TC, it's very obvious. She'd go to the Weeknd's house. That's what any sane woman would do.
Yeah. Hey, Weeknd, how you doing?
I got a bag of money. Will you let me in? Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say I had a bag of money, right?
Just, well, yeah, you know what? He is so good. Like, his hosting SNL the couple times he has is so good. I would absolutely have the Weeknd in the sequel. Yeah, for sure. mm-hmm.
Do you make it a buddy film, her and the Weeknd on the run?
No,
Weeknd probably screws her over too, anyway.
Yeah, and now he's successful. That's how he became successful. All right, done.
A woman on a run. There you go. I love
it. If she's a woman on a run, there's going to be people who are not going to be kind to her on her way. Mm-hmm. To the south of France.
I would take her from being on the run against the ropes to slowly getting the upper hand and not taking gambles. I'd make her the opposite of Howie, where she knows the mistakes that can be made when you take big risks and starts thinking pragmatically and starts thinking on her feet, but what's the right choice and starts navigating her way out of this. Even going to the point of the best way out of this is to pit everyone against themselves, so she takes out everyone coming after her all at once and successfully gets away with and actually, to make this even easier, I'd establish real easily that $1.7 million is incredible, but if she does the math, she only needs $555,000 to secure her rest of her life. So then in the end, not getting away with all the money, but just enough for her to survive.
Does she avenge the death of her Howie?
No.
Well, no. Absolutely not.
Yeah. For
she couldn't even.
No.
So there you go. There, the studio demanded it, and I hope on the spot here I gave you something good. and Julia is going to produce it for me. Thank you.
Right.
You're welcome.
I will direct, and TC.
Perfect.
Why don't you? We'll put you in the movie.
Cool. I'll be a guy at a gas station who tries to hit on her, and she's like, "Get the F away from me!" I'm like, "All right, all right." I just thought you were pretty. Is all I'm saying. Pretty lady.
Yeah.
She just gives me $100 to go away. I'm like, I'll never talk to you again. Thank you for money.
All right. If only if it weren't for this darn virus, we could go out and make this thing.
That's right.
Ugh.
Afterwards.
All right. Well, any final thoughts, TC, from you on this?
As I said, this is a movie for a specific kind of film viewer. I do not recommend this to the casual film watcher. I do not recommend this to someone who is more inclined to watch mainstream movies that are overly predictable or trite. Even if you like thrillers, I don't think this is for you. It's not going to satisfy that itch. But as a filmmaker, as someone who produces or writes or directs, or even someone who wants to prove themselves as an actor, there's a lot of unlikely actors in here. I did not know Julia was a newcomer. Kevin Garnett, The Weeknd, Adam Sandler, Idina Menzel is not a screen actress. Like, there's all these unlikely choices for in this movie. So yeah, from a film production point of view, filmmaker point of view, this is definitely a movie to watch. But bear in mind, it's very frustrating and your heart won't stop. So
yeah,
there you go. There's my final thought.
What about you, Julia? I want to give you the final word here.
Sure. No, I think I agree with DC. I mean, I think when I slacked, I would say slack because that's what I do at work. When I texted you this film or Messenger, I was like, take your Xanax to Chris. Yep. Chris is like, I'm going to watch it tonight. I'm like, take your Xanax ahead of time.
I should have.
I do think for like aspiring filmmakers, people who love films, people who can appreciate like everything that went into this film, it's something that you could really appreciate. It's stressful. I do want to say that it ranks right up there with like other films that you're like, well, I saw that because I know I should have, but I never want to watch it again. Yeah. but there's so much, so I cherry picked the scenes I wanted to watch. So I watched the beginning again, and then we watched a little of the middle with the fight, and then the end. There's so much amazing stuff that you didn't notice the first time. Like Kevin Garnett's eyes when he sees the opal for the first time. And it's that same sort of like addiction, like, oh, I have to have this. Mm-hmm. And like the way Howie is like stroking, he's looking at the gem and he's stroking it. And their performance. Yes. And like the two of their performance at the end where they're both crying, like when they reconcile and she shows him the tattoo and like there's so much. Yeah. But not to the casual movie watcher, if you don't like being stressed out, do not watch this film. Just read the synopsis. Don't watch the film.
Yeah, it's not one for to watch us after a stressful day at work.
No.
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 All right. Well, thank you both for joining us again and being members of the Filmological Society, where we watch films and talk about them for no reason. So
illogical.
It is. It is. It
doesn't make any sense.
Nope. Well, thank you both again. If you get a chance, check out The Studio Demands It, TC's podcast. And remember to do all your online gambling at VegasSportsBooks.com. Yeah, it just feels awkward saying it now, but they're paying us lots of money. So, all right.
That's true.
They're just fantastic.
I parlayed it all. Right now, Korean baseball, the only thing's going on. So you guys will get your cut for this show. Okay. But I parlayed it all into Korean baseball game. It's on at like 3 in the morning here. So the first hit, I don't know any of the names, but I picked a guy to be the first one to get a hit, first one to strike out. I just randomly picked it. I don't know. They could have been the mascots. I don't know. But we got it.
It's all about luck.
Yeah, we're gonna make a lot of money on this one. I know it. Anyway, thank you, everyone.
Fantastic.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Wear your masks.
Wear your masks.
Damn it. Please wear your masks. There's going to be no betting on sports in the fall. None.
We got fantasy football coming up. Wear your damn masks.
Oh, we need fantasy football. I got to get out of this slump.
The Filmological Society is a production of Redacted Media in association with Ghost Hat Media. For more information, find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, or visit us at www.ghosthat.net.